Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to those who know that the world's political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions are rotten to the core, that they are the problem and can never be part of any solution. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines, to know who is perpetrating the crimes that over the next 15 years will wreak havoc with our planet and cause so many to go astray. During our second hour, we're going to use evidence and reason. We're going to explore the Torah, because its covenant provides the only reliable escape. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion at any time over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. I want to begin with an email that I received this morning. It details a couple of aspects that are germane to this day. It is January 1st. It begins, "Good morning, Yada. I'm not sure if you'll get time to address this on today's show, but I was wondering if you could talk about the differences in the head of the year. Rosh Hashanah, I think, was along the lines of a Babylonian fiscal year, January being in honor of the pagan god Janus. Now, before I continue and we review the Janus connection and the Roman connection and the pagan connection to January 1st and New Year's Day, it is true that that Yehuda, when hauled away into Babylonian captivity, which was a fairly short-lived affair, the Northern Kingdom was a very different experience than was Yehuda. In the case of the Northern Kingdom, of course, the really all trace of genealogy and the tribal identity was lost. The Northern Kingdom was effectively destroyed by the Assyrians, and when they were hauled into captivity, it was in a most gruesome fashion. Fish hooks were put in their nose by the Assyrians, today's Iranians and Iraqis, and they were became slaves in Mesopotamia. At that time, the Yehudim and Yehuda were not savaged by the Assyrians because they took an entirely different approach. Now, this sounds like I'm going way backwards to explain Rosh Hashanah, and I am. I'm just trying to give a little perspective on this whole thing. But the region of Yehuda and the Yehudim, the tribe of Yehuda, in the region surrounding Jerusalem, had a revival. This was not a religious revival. It was an anti-religious revival. Hezekiah found a copy of the Torah in the temple. It hadn't been read in decades. He dusted it off, opened it up, read it, and said, "Oh boy, are we ever in trouble?" And he, based upon the Torah, decided that rather than forming alliances with other nations, which only made conditions worse, that he would trust and rely upon Yahweh, and he would celebrate Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, and to just put his trust and reliance on the very God who had offered these things to us. Now, the problem was that Yehuda was overtly religious. It was absolutely over the top in terms of the influence of pagan religion. And so it took Hezekiah considerable time to purge Yehuda, which was a fairly small area, and Jerusalem, and even the temple and the synagogues, all of them, of religious paraphernalia and artifacts and icons. And then he had another problem, and that is that at that time, the Kohen, the Lowi, or the ministers who had a role to perform relative to helping the people understand the symbolic meaning associated with Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, Passover, unyeasted bread, and firstborn children, that they were clueless. They were hard to find. They had no idea as to what their role was supposed to be, so they had to be trained based upon what the Torah says. By the time that he got around to it, he missed Passover. It wasn't possible to celebrate it at the right time. And this will eventually get to the timing of the year from Yahweh's perspective. What is the new year from Yahweh's perspective? And so Hezekiah went to Yahweh and said, you know, I get it. I've read the Torah. I understand that we should be meeting with you at these times and we should be relying on you and not foreign nations. And yeah, I understand there's 185,000 Assyrians armed to the hilt, bearing down on us, that wants to destroy us like they destroyed every town and city in the northern kingdom. He said, so I need a break here. I'd like to celebrate it, but we're going to be a couple of weeks late. Is that all right with you? Larry, I know you're listening here. What did Yahweh say to Hezekiah about celebrating Pesach, but being late?
He said that was fine.
Yeah, that was fine.
What he wouldn't accept is the religious symbolism that
right.
was strewn throughout the kingdom. That stuff had to be demolished.
Right. So he agreed. Hezekiah was on the right track. You have to separate yourself from religion. You've got to clean that religious muck from your life, and once you've done that, the timing of Pesach is far less important than what it represents. And that's why Yahweh said, you know, I'm not going to get all fixated on the timing here with you. You're doing the right thing. It's not so much about the timing as it is about the meaning, the purpose, the message, which is to rely on me for your life, for your salvation, for your adoption into my family. And so a couple of weeks late, the Yehudim and Yehudah, Yehudah means related to Yah and to relate to Yah, celebrated the Passover. Now, they celebrated Passover as it was intended, as a festival feast, as a party. In fact, they had so much fun celebrating Passover unyeasted bread and firstborn children, these three related days, that they Hezekiah was motivated to go to Yah and say, hey, you know, this was really fun. I know that it's a seven-day celebration, and we've done the 7 days, and we've had a great time celebrating with you. Would it be all right with you if we continued this another week? And Yah said, that'd be fine. Let's do it another week. And as a result, Yehudah was spared. Now,
and then right after that, if I'm not mistaken, they went out into all the rest of the areas and got rid of all the Asherah vestiges or Easter vestiges.
That is correct.
Ripped them all up.
That is correct. Yeah, Asherah and Easter, one and the same.
Sure.
And they did. Now, moving forward, as the political and clerical institutions are want to do, they got fixated on their own devices, and they once again excommunicated God from their institutions. And so Yisrael, during the time of Tabauk, once again became reliant on treaties with other nations. And in this particular case now, Assyria had fallen, but Babylon was on the rise, and they did everything they could do stupidly. They acted basically like the United States. Let's form, let's negotiate treaties with all these different countries, and let's trust our military, and let's trust our alliances, and let's trust diplomacy. And didn't work. In fact, they actually poked their finger in the eye of the Babylonians and kicked the hornet's nest, and they were hauled away into slavery. Okay, so that brings us to Rosh Hashanah. While they were in captivity, the Yehudim, which is the plural of Yehudi, on Yehud, were called Yahus, a derogatory term. So the website named Yahoo today, it is it's a slang term designed to demean both the Yehudim, which we call Jews today, and their God, Yahweh. Unfortunately for the Yehudim in Babylon, just as they had in Egypt, they embraced many Babylonian festivals. For example, they came back weeping for Tammuz. Weeping for Tammuz is now the Catholic Lent. It's the 40 days preceding their Easter. And in the case of the Babylonian religion, it represented the death of the son of the sun, and who was conceived, of course, on Easter, born on Christmas, but he had his death coincided with his birth in the terms of the same time of the year, Easter Sunday. So while they were there, since the Babylonian religion had the beginning of the year in the seventh month, along with a whole lot of other bad customs, the Jews embraced them. As a matter of fact, the prophetic letter of written to Yirmiyahu was specifically designed to awaken Gentiles to the fact that the Jews had gone astray and that they had embraced Babylonian paganism, and Rosh Hashanah was part of it. So when they came back from Babylon, and unlike the Northern Kingdom, the Yehudim were finally freed and able to come back to Jerusalem and reestablish Yehudah. And when they did, rather than observing Yahweh's beginning of the year, which is Abib, and we'll talk about that in the next segment, the Yehudim came and they celebrated Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year.
The Moed Mikra Taruah.
Right. So it is, from Yahweh's perspective and from his teaching, it's the seventh month of the year. And so the first day of the seventh month of the year became the Jewish New Year. It is the religious Jewish New Year to this day. And they know that they picked it up in Babylon. You know, Rosh Hashanah means head of the year. And so it is one of many examples of Judaism, of the religion of Judaism, being as Babylonian as is the religion of Christianity. It's an extraordinarily sad tale. But yes, even today, on the first day of the seventh month of the year, is the religious Jewish New Year called Rosh Hashanah. It is designed to cover up Teruah, which is Yahweh's fifth of seven meetings with us each year. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about the basis of the three different New Years based upon a letter that I received this morning from a listener. We've gone through the history of how the Jewish New Year changed and became the first day of the seventh month of the year, called now Rosh Hashanah, and how it covers over Teruah. And it's interesting when we consider the fact that they took one of Yahweh's seven designated Moed Mikre, or meeting times, and chose to celebrate it by an entirely different name, applying a pagan name to it. In this regard, what Jews have done with Rosh Hashanah is, and putting Rosh Hashanah directly on top of Teruah, which is trumpets, where we signal a warning and also herald the message that there is a path to God, there is a means for us to be part of His covenant family and to be saved as a result. It is identical to what Christians have done by putting Easter on top of Passover. You know, Easter is a purely back Babylonian festival. It is based upon Astarte. It's based upon the Mother of God, the Queen of Heaven, becoming impregnant by the rays of the sun on the Sunday nearest the spring equinox, and 9 months later on the winter solstice, what we call Christmas today. The Mother of God and the Queen of Heaven, Astarte, giving birth to the Son of the Sun. And so we see in Easter versus Passover exactly what we see in terms of of Rosh Hashanah, head of the year in Judaism, over Teruah. Makes God very angry. Now, moving on, before we consider what Yahweh has to say about the beginning of the year, and, you know, it is his universe, so I think we ought to at least consider God's perspective in this regard. But before we do, this is how the email continues. It says, January being in honor of the pagan Roman gods Janus. Well, that's true. Janus was the pagan god of doorways and therefore of entries, new beginnings. It would be, again, borrowing symbolism from a Passover. Passover is the doorway to heaven, the doorway to life. In 46 BCE, the Roman emperor, this email reads, Julius Caesar, and it was actually, there was no J at the time, it was Julius, and his last name was actually not Caesar, and Caesar just became a title. Caesar in Latin means hairy. So Julius was hairy, and therefore, since he was hairy, and that was his nickname, subsequent emperors decided that they would bequeath the hairy title upon themselves. It kind of loses a little of its charm when you know what the word actually means. But since these men claim to be God, I'm not the least bit immune from exposing their title. But in 46 BCE, the Roman Emperor Julius Caesar first established January 1st as New Year's Day. Janus was the Roman god of doors and gates and had two faces, one looking forward, one looking back. You know, there's a wealth management company called Janus. They still use that symbol. Caesar felt that the month named after this god, January, that's why it's called January today, the Roman god of doorways, was named Janus, would be appropriate. Caesar celebrated the first New Year's, January 1st, New Year's Day, Janus Day, by ordering a violent routing of revolutionary forces in the Galilee. Eyewitnesses say blood flowed in the streets. In later years, Roman pagans observed New Year's Day by engaging in drunken orgies, a ritual they believed constituted a personal reenacting of the chaotic world that existed before the cosmos was ordered by the gods. So the drinking melee that has become ubiquitous with the celebration of New Year's Day goes back to the pagan festival and is a specific rite that had meaning in the pagan celebration of Janus. Now, it is interesting. That's the article. I'm not up with my history of Julius Caesar in terms of what all happened during that time. But let me give you just a brief history of Yehuda during this period of time. In fact, we'll continue with this after the break. But we, in terms of post-scriptural, post-prophetic revelation in Yisrael, we find that a dynasty was established under the leadership of Simon Maccabeus, who became, in two decades after his brother Judas of the Maccabee, the Hammer, defeated the Seleucid army. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering the events surrounding Yisrael in particular during the celebration of the pagan month of Janus, the Roman imposition of the new year, which the entire world now celebrates as New Year's Day, based upon the pagan god Janus. And there was a mention in the email of this initially being celebrated by Julius Caesar attacking Galilee. And just a bit of a background here. Most are familiar with the Maccabean Revolt because what that led to, this was a post, you know, first and second Maccabees are not scriptural. They're historic books. And they denote infighting amongst Jews, particularly Jews of Hellenistic exposure. Versus the kind of rabbinic clan of Jews that wanted to be in keeping with the religion of that had grown called Judaism. And they had a war between the two of them, and the festival of Hanukkah, another Jewish religious celebration that has absolutely nothing to do with God, grew out of that time. And that's called the Jewish Civil War. It's recorded by Josephus. Well, after that, you find that there was major tensions between the Ptolemaic Egypt and the Roman Republic. And during that time, as Antiochus tried to assert control over that part of the world, you see Israel becoming a pawn. And Israel, because it was the land route from Rome down into Egypt, the gateway, if you will, into Egypt, came under strict Roman control. And the temple was sacked as well as the city by the Romans. And what you you find following that is that Israel again became a pawn in a proxy war. And this proxy war now was between Julius Caesar, who was the first to establish, albeit short-lived, the Empire of Rome based upon its kings being gods, and the Republic of Rome under Pompey the Great, the last of the leaders of the Republic of Rome. And so that's kind of the era that all of this takes place, and lots of infighting. But rather than make this a history lesson, let's go back to the New Year's debate. Yahweh tells us that the New Year's takes place in the month of Abib. Is there anything unique about Abib, Larry? Have you ever heard of anything associated?
The barley is ripe, green on the top.
Right, right. So it's the time of year that barley, which is the a grain crop, and it's the first grain crop to produce each spring, when the kernel of the barley is green. Now, everything Yahweh does is has symbolic meaning. In this particular case, if you read throughout the Torah and prophets, every time Yahweh mentions grain, barley in particular.
He's talking about souls.
Right. The kernel, the good part of the grain, is a saved soul. He uses it as a harvest metaphor, as a saved souls, because the grain metaphor, which makes bread without yeast, is a saved soul without the corruption of the fungus of yeast, which is his metaphor for matzah, which is the day that we are perfected, that the fungus of our sin is removed from us. And so the kernel of the grain is a symbolic of a saved soul. And the chaff, the part of the grain that has no value and dries up and blows away, God is saying, that's what happens to it. I mean, it's just the rest of it ceases to exist. It just dries up, blows away, and ceases to exist.
And that's symbolic of what? The people that don't know him, that aren't adopted
right.
into the family. So.
Yeah, and speaking of those who are swayed by either religion or politics and therefore are estranged from his family.
Well, one other thing, just to put a nail mm-hmm. in the coffin of this, you know, Janus thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his followers, they honored, and I'm assuming it was really Janus.
Yeah.
They honored him by making New Year's resolutions. So this is clearly, you know, because he looked forward and backward. And
right. You looked at the past and what you've done and looked forward to what you wanted to do. And so the New Year's resolutions and obsessive drinking were both specifically part of the celebration of this pagan holiday. You know, it's just like Easter. Almost every aspect of Easter and how it was celebrated by the Babylonians is incorporated into Christianity today. You know, you have a rabbit that lays eggs. That was part of the Romans, the Babylonian celebration, because rabbits were symbolic of fertility. And as were eggs. So you had a rabbit laying eggs, the Easter bunny. You had those eggs decorated in the colors of spring, and many died in children's blood. You had the Hotz Cross buns because the sun crossed through the constellation of Taurus the bull, which was the most universal symbol for the pagan god, at midday on the spring equinox. Where the day and the night are equal in length.
Yeah, the vernal equinox, absolutely.
Right. And so almost every aspect, even the Easter ham goes back to the Babylonian time because
they were
Nimrod, who
that
is
pig that killed
Tammuz, who was Nimrod, was killed by a wild boar. And so weeping for Tammuz, which is the Catholic Lent. And then the Easter ham, which is the animal that killed Tammuz, the son of the sun. It's all tied in together, and almost every aspect of what was done then in the pagan celebration is done now. So you may not know it, you may not care, but God does.
That brings up a point, because I had a debate last night, and of course I was Mr. Meany. You know, there were several people from the family watching it. They thought I was more than patient. But, you know, your intentions don't matter.
No, they don't.
They really don't matter. There was a place called Baal Peor. Mm-hmm. And there were a bunch of Yehudim. I think it was in the hundreds, wasn't it?
Yes.
That went to a celebration. It was like a dinner. But it was in honor of some pagan god over there.
Right.
And when they came back, you know, they'd had a good time and everybody was happy and they'd met new people and it was all great.
Right.
And
except it was a pagan celebration.
Right. And Yahweh said what? He said to Moses, you have him killed. And he did.
Yeah, he did. And the reason he had him killed.
The infection of religion is so deadly.
It's so deadly. And it permeates the entire community. And so, you know, since there was no hope for those individuals, they had chosen to for them, and as a result, that is where they found themselves is estranged from God, and therefore it was used as a way of demonstrating this estrangement.
Yeah. So this leads me to, so when somebody says to me, well, I really don't think anything's wrong with doing this. Well, you know, then you don't mind being part of the Babylonian whore talked about.
Correct.
You want to go whoring, especially since now you know what you're doing.
Yeah, and by having them killed, what God was saying is, I'm not going to look the other way on this kind of stuff. If you wish to be religious, that's your choice. You're going to die. And by having these few people die as a result of, because they were going to die at the end of their mortal existence anyway, but having them die prematurely, if you will, because of this choice, what God was trying to do is to encourage others to pay attention to what he's offering so they wouldn't make the same stupid choice. And yet,
because we have billions that are going to die thanks to religion here in the near future. And I have to say, you know, if you sacrifice or you cut off, what was it, 600 or something? It was a lot, I remember. You know, people, you know, to make a point that might save, you know, billions or could have, you know, that's a good trade.
It is a good trade, and that's what God was trying to communicate here. Now, there's a reason that we have description of the start of Yahweh's year being associated with Abib. It's not only that we have the barley and the harvest and the whole concept of a saved soul, and it ties into matzah and removing the yeast from these saved souls. It's also symbolic of the fact that while the barley kernel is still green, it's malleable and can grow. You know, when we become hardened, and you were talking about people who were, you know, is especially religious, when we become hardened, it becomes harder and harder for us to be receptive to God's message. And so in this particular discussion, God's saying, you know, you need to be careful here. And in the spring of the year, when this kernel is still soft and growing, it's the time when we are, as potential children of God, are receptive to his message and not hardened to it so that we don't care what he has to say. And so recognizing that the entire world at this time used the new moons as the start of a month, and the new moon, in Yahweh's parlance, he says, I want you to choose the renewal of the moon that's closest to the time that the barley kernel is Aviv. It's ripe. Still green. And growing in the kernel. And what that essentially means is it's going to be each year the renewal of the moon that's closest to the vernal equinox, third week of March. And so all we have to do is to pick that time each year and find the renewal of the moon that's closest to that time. And we know when Yahweh's new year begins, which is in the spring. It's the time that we have the opportunity to grow with him, because as we will soon find out, it is on the 14th, the 15th, and the 16th day of the first month of the year that Yahweh commences his meetings with us. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. Before we go to Glenn, who has called in with a comment on Easter, wanted to share that using Yahweh's instructions, the New Year's celebration, and there really is no New Year celebration. I stated that incorrectly. New Year will begin on Monday, March 31st. That would mean that the first celebration of the New Year, which occurs 14 days later, will commence on Sunday, April 13th, will be Pesach or Passover. Monday, the 14th, will be Matzah or unyeasted bread. And Tuesday, April 15th, will be the celebration of Bukurim, which is firstborn children. So that's the timing from Yahweh's perspective. You're open to choose time you wish to celebrate a new year, or not to celebrate a new year at all and instead celebrate with Yahweh on the days that he has chosen. Hello, Glenn. Welcome back.
Good morning. Yeah, turn off my Bluetooth here because that had caused a problem recently.
Okay, this is the phone itself. I just wanted to add some. I often wondered about Easter when I finally looked into it, trying to figure out why the day wanders around the calendar so much. And it's because it's not only is it the vernal equinox, but it's the first Sunday after the first ecclesiastical full moon after the vernal equinox, and that's how pagan and astrological it is.
Right.
Ecclesiastical full moon means that it's based on charts that, you know, the church fathers wrote about when the full moons would occur, which aren't really completely accurate. So it's not even the actual full moon. That, you know. So that's how screwed up it is. It's just mind-blowing.
There's something else about it that I have read. I can't prove this at the moment, but I'm fairly certain that I have read a number of sources that also say that there's one more element to establishing the full moon. It's not only the Easter is not only the full moon. Of course, they're trying to simulate Pesach and Matzah and Bukurim, because those occur on a full moon, because it's the 13th, 14th, 15th day of the month. Right, lunar calendar. So they're not using a lunar calendar, but they still want to simulate the full moon. Around that time of year to have a replacement holiday. But should Easter, under their calculations, then fall on Passover, they will move Easter. Easter is moved either before or 1 week earlier or 1 week later if it were to actually fall on Passover.
to make sure to rub salt in the wounds or add insult to injury.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. They don't want in any way, shape, or form their pagan Babylonian religion to have any association with the instructions in Yahweh's Torah.
How about that?
But, yeah, how about that? Isn't that pretty, pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, why did they never teach me this, you know, when I saw formal education in these things, you know?
Yeah,
and
this is really useful stuff. If people actually were taught religion, the origins of religion, what they're based on, how religions have merged into one, you know, how many of the Christian celebrations, from its Trinity to its cross to its celebrates, you know, worship on Sundays, its Easter and Christmas, how many of those things actually historically were incorporated into the religion from Babylon and through Egypt and Greece and Roman mythology, that would be useful information, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, it's amazing how many facts we don't. The fact that Caesar means Harry, that's fascinating, but I've never learned that. Nobody ever told me that. The Roman Catholic Church actually claims that anyone who worships on Sunday is tacitly acknowledging their authority because they admit to being the ones who changed it from the Sabbath. So they're in their papal bulls and stuff. It says that anyone who worships on Sunday is tacitly acknowledging their authority.
As a matter of fact, it's even worse than that. Your point is valid, but it's even worse than that. When the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church is questioned as to say, what is your justification for Sunday worship when Yahweh, the person you allege is the individual that you allege is God, never rescinded the Shabbat, and Yahusha celebrated, observed the Shabbat, what is your justification for Sunday?
Right.
And they said, well, they say, you know, there is no scriptural justification, but demonstrating that we're right, the proof that we're right, is that all non-Catholic Christian denominations acknowledge Sunday. So they have tacitly agreed with our decision, and therefore our support is other Christian denominations copying us. And as you know, they chose Sunday because it wasn't the Shabbat, and they chose Sunday specifically because it was the day that their Lord, the sun god, Mithras, was honored.